Legal arguments for and against gay marriage reverberated through courtrooms and statehouses this past week. In the California Supreme Court, the city of San Francisco responded to a pair of petitions challenging marriage licenses granted to gay and lesbian couples. The mayor of New Paltz, New York, obeyed a temporary restraining order preventing him from performing any more marriages of same-sex couples. A legal coalition in Oregon filed suit to stop officials in Multnomah County from performing gay weddings, and in Kansas and Wisconsin, state constitutional amendments banning gay marriage cleared preliminary legislative hurdles. Sarah Gordon is a professor of law and history at the University of Pennsylvania, and she joins us from the studios of WHYY in Philadelphia. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Leanne.
Take us back over the past 200 years or so. Are there similar examples in American legal history to what's happening now over same-sex marriages?
Well, in some ways, this is a classic American way to behave, to disobey in the interest of challenging what is perceived as an unjust law on the part of those who are disobeying it. And it goes back certainly to the roots of the American Revolution and protests against what was conceived as an iron English rule and a failure to grant North American British citizens the rights that were granted to English citizens in the United Kingdom.
Anything more contemporary?
Certainly. We can move right through to, for example, the civil rights movement. I think if you read carefully Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from a Birmingham jail, the central question that he asked and answered is, what should one do when confronted with an unjust law?
Does what's happening now strike you as civil disobedience?
To some extent, yes, and it is a classic form of civil disobedience, challenging the restriction of marriage to male and female and expanding it beyond, bringing couples who otherwise would not be married to the attention of the country and showing their happiness in an effort to have the law itself change. That's the classic goal of civil disobedience.
Would that be Henry David Thoreau's definition, I guess, who he advocated breaking laws that an individual might feel are unjust and to accept the consequences for breaking those laws?
Absolutely. And in many, many different situations, this has come to the fore. I think the one that was perhaps most poignant involved abolition before the Civil War and what Northerners were expected to do in response to, say, the presence of an escaped slave, whether or not to obey the fugitive slave laws that would take a person who had just gained his or her freedom, send them back to the South and into slavery.
Does it matter if you're a Joe or Jane civilian or an elected official if you're breaking the law? I mean, elected officials have taken an oath vowing to uphold the law.
Yes, it does matter, of course. And office holding has burdens. And yet we always ask our office holders, we always want our politicians of all stripes to be full people, to bring their moral judgment to bear as well as their promise to uphold the law. We want them to think issues through. So yes, while it is different, we also don't want people to park their humanity at the door when they walk in and take up their official duties.
Does civil disobedience have a special place in the law?
It does and it doesn't. We are all presumed to know what the law requires of us. For example, if caught violating a criminal law, the classic expression is that ignorance of the law is no excuse. So in many ways, we're all held to the same standard. In other ways, In American government, we have designed the system to respond to the demands for change made by the people so that we encourage the kind of involvement that you see when protests take place, exhortations, and so on. Civil disobedience is that kind of protest through example rather than through, I don't know, speeches or other action. The example is perhaps the most effective means of communication, because it's a human being putting his or her life, future, freedom on the line to demonstrate that the law itself is unjust. It's also a very dangerous undertaking. It's not always the case that violating the law and trying to produce a change, in fact, works.
Give us an example.
Obviously, my own work has taken me deep into an area where we debated marriage as a whole country and decided that polygamy was not acceptable. More than 1,000 Mormon men went to jail in protest and continued to maintain their right to practice polygamy. They called themselves prisoners for conscience' sake. And in the end, they gave up. The church gave up. There simply was no movement in the rest of the country to back off and to say, well, all right, because you care so much, we will now allow you to practice polygamy.
Sarah Gordon is a professor of law and history at the University of Pennsylvania. She's the author of The Mormon Question, Polygamy and Constitutional Conflict in 19th Century America, published by the University of North Carolina Press. She joined us from the studios of WHYY. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leanne.